going to leave this case, but if we can start the proceedings.
Any nominations? Mr. Machova? Any seconder? Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, and our visitors, the minister and your team. I don't know whether it's appropriate to call you visitors every year, frankly. It doesn't make sense. Like, interlopers. Okay. All right, yeah. Today we are meant to deal with the annual report. Is any member interested in adding to that agenda for today? Honorable Tumi?
I would like maybe to add the part of introduction.
Introductions?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, you still want introduction. You see, Honorable Ntlengata continues to be new. Even after 4 months, more than 100 days. Okay, now we'll do that, yeah. Members, please introduce yourself to Honorable Ntlengeto. I have introduced her already. She's from Mpumalanga, from Gartibande District. I won't go further than that. I run the risk of saying things she won't agree with. So you dare say anything, your height is going to be chopped. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am. For introduction.
Go ahead, Ms. Bia.
I'm Celia Bisotelo from the Northwest Province.
Which organization?
The UCDP.
Willem Duerman, Democratic Alliance, Western Cape.
Marty Winger, Democratic Alliance, Outstanding.
Aidan Williams, ANC, also from Gartibande District.
Joel Mduabandu Machoba, from Eastern Cape, ANC.
Chairperson, you have already introduced me. Tumisile Ntlengeto, from Mpumalanga, Gartibande Region, ANC. Whip of the committee.
My name is Rexen Rurengo from the department. No region, no party, official.
Now tell us where you are deployed in the department. You certainly are deployed in some portfolio or another. What area did you say you are deployed in?
I am from the Free Basic Services and
Okay, that's, yeah, that's the deployment I'm talking about. Yes.
Good morning, I'm Sintu Mgadi from COCTA with Systems and Capacity Building.
Good morning, I'm Malungelo Chida from Finance in the Department.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Mbulelo Sikaba from Finance, Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ongama Mashawe. I'm from the Department Infrastructure and Economic Development.
Good morning. My name is Dumim Chetty from the Department in the Monitoring and Evaluation Branch.
Good morning. My name is Thembe Kapama, Clean Cities and Towns.
Good morning, honorable members. Heather Engelbrecht, Head of Human Resources. Also deployed here on behalf of the Head of Corporate Services.
Morning all. Peter Smith, IFP, KZN. Yunus Karim, former committee chairperson of this committee.
Now, you know who's going to egg the man after they twist the sheet.
Good morning, Sonali Ngwe is a support staff. Thank you.
Sitting casting committee's history.
Thank you very much. Introductions having been done, we will now proceed to hear the annual report. Talks about a year at the end of which we had an election, and so there are transitional issues about it that obviously will arise, but that the deputy minister leading his team, he will talk to us to those things. So it's now your chance to talk to us.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, to stress that obviously both the minister and I are clear that when it comes to the budget and the annual report, the political principles should be here. Unfortunately, there's a meeting of the Cabinet Committee right now, which is considering local government issues, not least the turnaround strategy in Indaba last week and the meeting of the President with the municipal mayors and managers. So therefore, he can't be here, and he asked me to tender his apology and to say that he wishes the meeting well and that he's keen to hear what comes out of it. As indeed, he's always keen to hear. And I must tell you, the last time we discussed the stress plan with you, immediately thereafter, I bumped into him in the corridor, and he dragged me off to his office and asked me and the DG to explain what came out of the meeting, and we had our notes right there and then, and we spelled it out to him. He also thought, by the way, the inputs you made in response to our stress plan were very useful, most of which we will attend to over the coming months. I also want to thank those of you who did turn up at the Indaba last week. The turnaround strategy that, the framework at least of the national turnaround strategy that emerged there will be brought to Parliament as soon as it's possible. I think the parliamentary liaison officer, Jez Mokwena, will be relating with the chairperson of the committee to, you know, arrange a sitting. We would like a sitting in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We should alert you that that framework is no more than a framework. It's a tentative one. The decision taken at the Indaba was to reach out to the stakeholders, business, unions, civil society actors, and so on, between now and late November, before we take it to Cabinet in December. The other issue is, I noticed the chairperson was in a friendly way bantering, but jibing at me the last time I was 3 minutes late. I, in fact, was here. I left the Cabinet Commission meeting at 9:25. I need to let you know the President wasn't impressed. He felt that local government must deliver more expeditiously. And he said, I couldn't go. And I told him, no, I'm afraid, President. I have to answer to Parliament. So he said, no, you can't go. And I said, no, I have to go. And then as I was going away, he pulled me. And then my minister came and he pulled me in the opposite direction. So we had a tug of war with the minister and myself on one side and the President and the deputy President on the other side, which shows you how important we take Parliament. And maybe Peter Smith can put a question to the President and deputy President. Why were they pulling me back into the meeting as the minister was hauling me out from the meeting? But having said that, it was really disappointing to get here at 9:28 and there's no meeting. So we have a program here, Chairperson, on a more serious note. It's 9:30. The meeting is starting to 12:45. Half an hour is a lot of time to lose, to be fair. And I don't know where the misunderstanding comes from, but our understanding is committee meetings start at 10. So So we would like to plead that they remain at 10, because it also helps us, like, interestingly, the last time I came here for the strat plan, we were smack in the middle of three presentations we made to Cabinet on the Green Paper on Cooperative Governance, on the State of Local Government Report, and so on, and things that actually you yourself were very pleased with taking to Cabinet, and I had to leave to come here, even if I was 3 minutes late. So I did explain to the Deputy President that, you know, I'm sorry, I have to leave at 9:25, because he also said, isn't it 10? Because he's a leader of government business and he's aware of that. So we would be grateful if meetings can be held at 10, or we can't subscribe to Parliament, that some concession be allowed, that Minister or the Deputy Minister be allowed to come in at 10, because Cabinet meetings are from 8:30 to 10:30 on a Tuesday, which clashes with security. So please, if I can be excused for meetings in future until 10 o'clock, I'll be very grateful, or you revert to the 10 o'clock meeting. Having said that, we will say that we think it's a very important occasion. The chairperson has communicated that to some extent neither the minister nor I can account for the full year. The minister got into his current post, I think in September last year, in dramatic circumstances, as you know. But for the most part, he was finding his feet. We are now, so to speak, in charge and more accountable to you. And of course, you know, since this beginning of this new term, we are, in fact, a more expanded department with a new mandate, much of the old, but a lot of the new. And so, but of course, we are politically accountable in the broad sense, and we will serve to do so. We want to stress to you that in the year under review, with the DPLG then, we adapted, so I'm told, by the department, whose preparation for me I am reading. So I take it that you will understand that I'm just mouthing somebody else's words, and I'm not sure that it's altogether correct, and they will answer for me, because these are not my words. It is suggested that, it is said rather, that local government transfers administered by the department last year were partly taking into account the recession. It was in the midst of the negative impacts of the global economic and financial recession. Of course, we need to note, as was the case when I was chairing this committee, that some 98% of the grants to municipalities is what constitutes our budget. So these constitute mainly, as most of you would know, the new members may not, the municipal infrastructure grant, the local government equitable share, and the municipal system improvement grant. The DPLG then had seven programs: administration, which is obvious, monitoring and evaluation, which is obvious, governance, policy and research, which it said is aimed to strengthen the delivery and governance system across the three spheres of government, and the supporting institution of traditional leadership. Program 3 is on urban and rural development, which focuses on managing, as you know, coordinating and monitoring in the identified urban and rural nodes. I come from a cabinet committee meeting over here that discussed the rural nodes, and the progress that's been achieved in transferring much of that to the Department of Rural Development, that maybe somebody on our side would like to take that further, because they are involved in the negotiations with that department. On systems and capacity building, that's program 4, you understand from the term what it is. Program 5 is of interest to you, I have no doubt, basically basic services and infrastructure. Program 6 is the transfers, which of course provides for both conditional and unconditional grants to be transferred to municipalities. And of course, program 7, the fiscal transfers for the various associated institutions such as CELGA, as I saw you on Nestle here, by the way, and the Municipal Demarcation Board, and so on. Now, we want to suggest that this year that's under review was accompanied, as you know more than me, by high-level reforms, because you processed it as a parliamentary committee. Cabinet in that year, needless to say, approved of the Department of Traditional Affairs, Peter Smith, being established, and we have communicated to you that we are now negotiating with Treasury for the funds and finances for it. Secondly, we introduced to you, as you know, several pieces of legislation: the Local Government Laws Amendment Act, the Municipal Demarcation Amendment Act, amended to provide for the determination of municipal boundaries to take effect on the commencement of the next financial year. Municipal Structures Act was amended to provide for out-of-pocket expenses for ward committees. In fact, only today at the Cabinet Committee meeting we reported that the regulations regarding that were promulgated recently, and Cabinet noted that. Also, the Property Rates Act is before you for amendment. We also submitted to Parliament the traditional leaders' goals with, and that in some form or another being processed through the NCOP, and we are pleading that we finish that bill before the end of the year in both houses, because there's now a vacuum created with the lapsing of the term of the so-called Maluleke Commission, previously the Chapo Commission, whose term lapses, I think, at the end of October, and therefore we don't have a commission. And as you can see from the media, there are huge claims on the work of that commission, which commission we have stressed has not produced the goods, and we hope Parliament would appropriately take that up and deal with that as expeditiously and as stringently and rigorously as you're required to do in terms of your constitutional role. I really think the new commission has answered to you far more regularly and no less than once every quarter. In terms of going forward, as you know, we brought to you not so long ago our COCTA strategic plan. Last week you were part of you at least, and we regret that not all of you were there. We invited the entire committee, but we'll report back to you very shortly. We agreed on the local government turnaround strategy, at least in its tentative form, and we issued a declaration which was now, I think, it's coming into the newspapers this weekend, and I think your committee chair will have received in the next, what, 24 hours, and if he hasn't, just will facilitate it, the declaration as we passed it, which was quite substantially agreed to. We're going to complete the policy review process subject to guidance by Cabinet before the year is out, and we'll bring that to you, and you will no doubt assist in facilitating community participation, public participation in shaping that process. Mobilize and coordinate, I'm told, is one of our other aspects of our strategic plan, stakeholders and partners, as well as communities in the social compact, implementing key flagship programs such as the Operation Clean Audit, which you know about, and the review enhancement and debt management. In fact, we were warning you that... is it not carried? Okay, I'm sorry, fine, I'm happy, I'm reading somebody else's text. Maybe they can read it faster. Turn around the DPLC qualified audit opinion into a qualified audit opinion for cooperative governance and traditional affairs in the first audit year. We plead guilty. It is awkward that we are asking municipalities and provinces to have, you know, clean audits, but we didn't deliver ours. So I can assure you the minister is hell-bent, to put it wisely, on identifying the culprit and dealing with them. In fact, I've been in two meetings over the last 2 weeks where he's determined to haul over the coals, to put it mildly, the people who are responsible for this. So you will hear shortly, and I think you must call us before you to explain that. You can do it today. Improve the public participation system is a key part of our strategy. So I want to say that, in short, that... look, we think that the last year, the financial year we are considering, the department performed reasonably, is our view. But we are clear it's certainly nowhere near good enough, and we are determined to improve, and you will help us by ensuring through our quarterly report back meeting to you on progress in implementing our strategic plan, that you bring enormous pressure to bear on us so that we deliver on what we promised, not just to you as Parliament, but to the people out there whom you represent. And it's towards that end that I hope that you will engage rigorously with us today and in future. Thank you indeed.
Members, the Deputy Minister has put the political story overall. Now, we're going to come back to some of his remarks and what he has said about the report and so on. But let's first hear the picture. Who's going to lead the team, and how are you going to manage them? Who leads? You'll do the presentation. Okay, to me. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. The Deputy Minister has assisted to give the overview. Some of the... Is it better?
Yeah.
I was saying the Deputy Minister has assisted with the overview. I'm just going to reflect on some of the things that were not necessarily covered in his input. The mission statement is just a reminder of what informed the performance of the department in the 2008-2009 financial year. This has obviously changed with the new strat plan that was presented to the committee, I think, a week or two ago. This is just a summary of the overall performance. Just a correction there. We had a total of 98 outputs in the 2008-09 financial year. Out of that, the percentages, you'll notice that they calculate up to 100, so it's 100% of the 98. The performance outputs that have been achieved constitute 68% of that. Those that are partially achieved constitute 24%. Partially achieved for new members means that we're able to carry out the work up to a point, but we couldn't finish it within the set time frame. So it had to be taken over or carry over to the next financial year. And where we did not perform constitute 8% of the total output. With regard to program one, you'll recall that the work in local government was at the time guided by the 5-year local government strategic agenda. Other than the other work related to that, we were able to develop the communication framework for that area of work. There was a high-level overview findings with regard to the perceptions generally in local government. The corporate services unit also developed. Sorry about that, I assumed members have, because this was sent to yesterday. The corporate services unit also developed a baseline with regard to services that they provide to different internal units. The 07-08 annual financial statements were finalized on time. There was reference already to the qualification that we got in this past financial year after 7 years of good performance. Our medium-term expenditure framework submissions were also finalized on time and submitted to National Treasury. The other achievement, Chair, is with regard to the implementation of the performance management system in municipality. And based on the support that was provided last year, we've seen an increase in the number of municipalities implementing the performance management system from 153 to 223. We are also able to produce the annual performance report for municipalities by the end of this year. You'll recall that we were behind in terms of time frame, so this will be the 2006-07 performance report. We conducted a need assessment in some of the municipalities, and those that came out this week, we then organized the necessary hands-on support to provide to those. There were 5 districts spread throughout the provinces. We've also been working very closely with National Treasury to streamline the reporting processes as expected from municipalities to avoid duplication. On Program 2, which is Governance, Policy and Research, the policy review process was presented to Cabinet Lekgotla in January. The other statutory requirement was that we are expected to produce the IGR report annually, and that was done as planned. The policy framework on COISAN was also approved by Cabinet in March this year. By December last year, the processes towards the establishment of the Department of Traditional Affairs were finalized, and that process is obviously going to change based on the renaming of the department this year after the elections. 150 officials were trained in local economic development issues. and the IDP credibility improved by 0.5% in the year under review. With regard to Program 3, which is urban and rural development, the Deputy Minister indicated that the ISRDP functions have transferred to the Department of Agriculture. The negotiation processes are still underway. But just in the form of progress last year is that a verification of the strategic LED projects in those areas was undertaken. Also, the Spatial Development Framework Assessment study was conducted in the Bushbuck Ridge local municipalities. The nodal economic profile, recall that we conducted a research the year before this where the profiles of the nodes were determined, and that was launched in the nodal areas as reflected there. And the district-wide opportunity assessment was also completed as part of the project Kulisim Note. The program for systems and capacity building is the biggest program in the department in terms of responsibilities. The national capacity building framework that was finalized in 2007-08 was rolled out to provinces last year, and by the end of the financial year, three provinces had already developed their municipal capacity building framework informed by this strategy. The financial performance focusing on six assets. These are issues of good financial management practices. The establishment of committees, that was done in 160 municipalities. 165 municipalities were also assisted to develop their anti-corruption and fraud prevention plans. And with regard to the implementation of the HIV and AIDS framework, support was provided to 47 of the municipalities. Still on Program 4, the department provided support to 15 districts with regard to the disability framework. The VUNA Awards were successfully held in December 2008. The municipal infrastructure grant finance to the value of 177 million was mobilized to assist with bulk water and sanitation, as well as drought and flood relief. A skills audit was conducted in 15 of the municipalities. This is a long-term project. It started about 2 years ago, and the process is incremental in nature. So in the past financial year, we were able to undertake this work in 15 of the municipalities. The National Development Management Center has also supported our provinces to ensure that there's a functionality within their own disaster management centers. Seven provinces established their centers, and the 2010 disaster management plan was also developed to help the host cities. The Property Rights Act was gazetted. We are aware of the amendments that Parliament is considering with regard to this act. Currently, the other colleagues that are not here are presenting those amendments to the NCOP. The 19 municipalities were supported again with regard to rape policy development, bylaws, and all of that. We worked with the Development Bank of Southern Africa to undertake that work. Support was also provided for the implementation of the Municipal Finance Management Act and the rollout with regard to annual financial statements. Still on Program 4, the knowledge sharing workshop was organized to pick on lessons learned from the hosting of the World Cup by Germany and to assist the host cities in particular. A technical support was also provided to host cities with regard to the program management and development of their own operational plans. A communication protocol was also adopted to ensure that there's better coordination between the partners. Support was provided to various sector departments guided by this implementation plan. Furthermore, still on this work, a multidisciplinary team of key government departments was also established. A resource pool of service delivery facilitators was established to support the process. And key partners were mobilized as well to support the host cities with the responsibilities on 2010. Under Program 5, which is Free Basic Service and Infrastructure, we're providing statistics there with regard to the provision of free basic water, free basic electricity. 39 municipalities in the 5 provinces were assisted with assessment with regard to the indigent policies. The national framework on the funding model was approved by Cabinet in February last year. It has to be published for public comments this year. The study report detailing the indigent selection criteria, conditions for free basic services support and options was also completed, and the support interventions undertaken in all municipalities to prepare for municipal infrastructure grant implementation in the current financial year. This section of the report deals with the performance of the first quarter within 2019. Maybe I should move to the finances. I'll come back to this and just deal with the overall performance for the past financial year. So if members can go to slide 19, I think, yeah, we will go back to those slides now. If you can just go quickly to slide 19, which deals with the financial performance of the department in the past financial year. It provides there a comparative data of the overall budget of the department in 2007-08 as compared to 2008-09. You'll notice a difference of about 5.6. Those figures are in billions, so it's 30 billion for the year before and 35 billion for last year. The next slide provides a comparative analysis of the expenditure as against the savings for the year under review. The idea is just to reflect the consistency with regard to the expenditure vis-a-vis spending in particular, and show that the only year where we think that our saving was a bit high, but arguably low comparatively speaking, was in 2006-07, but for the other years, there's consistency, as you'll notice. The overall saving for 08-09 is about 290 million. I won't talk to this slide. It really explains the analysis that I've already referred to. There's much more detailed information with regard to the financial performance of the organization if members want to engage. The colleagues from the CFO's office will assist to provide that information. If we can go back to slide 14. This slide deals with just a quick sense of the performance of the organization for the first quarter of 2009-2010. The members are aware of the launch of the Operation Clean Audit by 2014. The process is underway to ensure that different provinces launch this project. Friday this week will be in Free State for the launch of this. A comprehensive assessment on the state of local government was conducted in July. That led to the local government Indaba that was held last week, and a number of committee members were present. We've seen them there. We are taking that process forward this week to ensure that we are able to present the turnaround strategy to Cabinet by December as we have planned. The Minister has also undertaken a national communication approach to deal with a number of service delivery protests that we have seen throughout the country. The other deliverable is that the department has established a multi-stakeholder team led by the minister to enable the department, working with partners and SALGA, to respond speedily to some of the protests that are going on in municipalities. The department also had consultations with communities in the Moutse and Matatiele district to deal with issues of disputes regarding the demarcation process. The Moutse process was conducted during the week of 12 to 16 October. It finalized. The results are being processed. The process for Matatiele starts tomorrow, and it will finish on Friday. And once the results are finalized, I'm sure the department will share that with Parliament and committee members. I've made reference to the support that we are providing with regard to the host cities and the 2010 FIFA World Cup. We have increased the number of members to include the chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leaders, the mayors, in executive mayors in particular, in provinces, and the other relevant mayors in some of the host cities. We've also completed the process of reviewing the performance of the department in the past financial year. We have developed the new strategic plan that was presented to the committee members, as I've indicated earlier on, so members are aware of the issues. We've reviewed the reporting framework to ensure that our reports cover all the necessary issues. The performance management implementation support was extended to four more districts. I indicated earlier that we covered five districts previously. The intention is to do few districts based on our capacity on an annual basis, and this has really yielded positive results. We've also finalizing the performance indicators that will in future inform the assessment of the performance of municipalities. We've also developed the draft guidelines to assist with reporting. We've picked from the lessons of the review that was undertaken in municipalities this year, and we're trying to align that to the reporting requirements in the MSA with regard to sections 46, 47, and 48. I've already made reference to the process with regard to the Property Rate Act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Members, there's the report presentation done. There is information provided that deals with this year, things that have been done this year. Let us focus our comments and questions first on the year under review in the annual report, so that we clean that up in our discussions, and then towards the end we can deal with the new issues if there's any need to do that. So that's the report before us. The Deputy Minister has raised issues, and to have done the presentation. Who wants to start? Adrian, Peter Smith, Domen.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I just want to say that we only received this report, this morning, and I think that's a serious problem. I think the department should take us more seriously and give us the report so that we can read it, because it's very difficult to talk on a report when we've only just received it. So in future, please.
The annual report was submitted to Parliament many moons ago. So it is Parliament that you must blame if you didn't receive it. They get submitted to every member's pigeonhole and or somewhere else. What you can moan about is the slide which we are told was presented yesterday. That one, I think it's, I have to say that, yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
Just to defend Adrian, this yeah. document here
yeah.
may have been submitted to Parliament weeks ago, months ago, but I didn't get it today. So that's still valid point.
Yeah, but when it's submitted to Parliament, who must get it? It's not the department. Your whips, the people who are responsible for getting staff reports for you, must are the ones who must collect it. Yes, administration of Parliament. Yes. So if you want to deal with anybody, Shireen is here. She represents Parliament. That's who you should do. But otherwise, this thing is delivered to us. I got two, by the way.
Continue, Chairperson.
Sorry?
Can I continue now?
Yeah, now you can continue.
Thank you. Okay, on slide one or slide three, it says there that outputs achieved, outputs partially achieved, and outputs not achieved. That 8% doesn't mean anything to me, because it could be 8% of 99 if you just number your achievements. But it could, that 8% could represent the problem that's causing problems in municipalities across the country at the moment. So a bit more detail on that 8%, what exactly wasn't achieved. I'd also like to know who wrote these reports, because there seems to be a lot of consultancies still operating within the department, and perhaps there needs to be capacity building within the department instead of relying on external consultants. Okay, on slide number six, point number seven, it's saying the IDP SP credibility improved from 79% to 79.5%. I'd like to know who's writing these IDPs, because we're not getting information. I'm still of the opinion that IDPs, once again, are written by consultants, and municipalities have very little input, in, especially the people on the ground at ward committee level. There's very little input. And just to take consultants' IDPs and say that they've improved doesn't really tell us anything. On slide number 9, point number 9, it says skills audits were conducted in 15 municipalities. Now, I don't know, the total of municipalities is what, 265 or something of that nature, 280 or something. 15 municipalities in a two-year period. I'd like to know what the department's doing with the CETA with regard to this, because the workplace skills plans and the skills development facilitators should be involved in this process, and 15 municipalities is clearly not a lot of municipalities in total. Okay, thank you, Chippers.
Just a couple of things. I think it's a slight problem that we still don't have finality on the question of leadership of the department, of the DG. In this report he's acting, but this is a legacy report, but he's still acting now, which I find a bit problematic. But anyway, be that as it may. And I also think it's a bit unfortunate. I know the Deputy Minister expressed regret, but it's a bit unfortunate. This department, which has had a very, very clean record, for the first time, I think, now, has had a qualified audit. It was most unfortunate, but be that as it may, I'm inclined to think that the department has done a reasonable job as well over the year. I just a couple of questions. The M&EE program, I remember one of the issues we raised last year was the extent to which the M&E was being integrated into a whole of government M&E, and I'm not quite sure that I understand how that pans out in terms of the last financial year reporting. That also, of course, has a bearing on the compliance, all those compliance requirements of municipalities to the plethora of reporting and so on and so forth to multiple arms of government. But just a query on that. And then the free basic services, I'm not quite sure what the time frame was, but didn't we have, I mean, what has the effect been, for example, of free basic electricity? What has the effect been of the massive tariff hike in the last financial year? Didn't we get a 32% hike last year? I'm not sure how that played out in terms of the budget and how the department, how this affected the FBE program. And if you bear in mind, I know it's asking a question of the future, not the past, but if we get 45, 45, and 45, do you get an automatic, you know, is the process in government such that the appropriation automatically compensates for that? Or how does it work at the local level? I'm also very concerned that this commission, the commission, the leadership, traditional leadership dispute commission, has been so non-functional over quite a period, in fact. And I think it's one of those examples of this committee not actually adequately applying its mind to what's going on out there and just allowing things to carry on when we shouldn't have allowed that to happen. It's very poor on our side. So comment on that. And then to the rural development, I know reference was made to the fact of the rural, I think by the Deputy Minister, or was it, I'm not quite sure who made the comment, about being transferred to the other department. Was that something that was meant to be happening in the course of, it wasn't meant to be happening in this financial year, was it? It's not something that deals with in terms of this report. It is.
No, it's not. That's one of the errors. That's new. But let me do this once you are at it. To me, you said to the Department of Agri. Did you mean that and not rural development?
Land reform.
Rural development and land reform. I noticed that you were wrong, but fast. How can you be fast and go into the wrong direction? Okay, all right.
Just out of curiosity, on page 13, slide 13, there's just a couple of stats here, and I just want to compare the stats to make sure that I'm on the same program, same wavelength as the department. If you look at page 17 of the annual report, you've got the acting DG's reporting. Page 17 of the annual report, as Elroy's comment on various things, and then slide 13. They're not speaking to exactly the same thing, but I just want to understand what the difference is. If you look at page 17 at the bottom, it says here, take the first one. 80% of households had access to electricity in 2007. 80%, right? And then we have in the slide, 58% of indigent households get free basic electricity. Now, is it to be taken that the difference between two stats is simply those who are billed? In other words, the difference between the 80% who have access to electricity and the 58% who get SBE is simply those who are billed. It's not different sets of figures referring to things that I don't understand. Likewise with water, you'll see in the slide, 75% of indigent households receive free basic water, but the percentage of households in the country with access to piped water in the same year is 89%. So again, would I be correct in saying that the difference between 75 and 95 is simply that the one lot is built? And I must say that figure of 89 I find extraordinarily high. I mean, KZN alone, for example, has got a quarter of the country's population, and in the rural areas, there's no piped water. It virtually doesn't exist. Is it correct to say nearly 89% of households in South Africa have access to piped water? I don't mean water, piped water. Because I know in KZN, for example, in the rural areas, the water is taken by trucks. Potable water is taken by trucks in much of the place. Tankers. People get out of the river. Certainly don't get piped water. So I find that figure very high. If it's true, I'm thrilled. But really, it strikes me as higher than I'd expect. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Now, I also think the department done very well, actually. If you look at the whole report, there's so many programs and so many things that were achieved. I mean, in general, we must really say that they did well. The department can do 100 things in the country to assist municipality, and perhaps they get to 80 of those, and it's all very, very good work. The criticism that I also had at the last meeting is just, what does the effect really be on the ground? How does the municipalities really benefit from what the department is doing and all the programs? I mean, that's always a challenge. And as we've just heard, a lot of the information that the department has to rely on is unreliable, and they've started the program, they started now to go out and get the information themselves, which is a very, very good thing. So with that two or three remarks, I really think we must congratulate the department with what they've done and this whole report, which incidentally was available about more than 2 weeks ago. I already issued a short statement on this, so it was available. Okay, now.
You see, you are being outdone by the opposition. I must say, what should they
do? Okay, I'll just begin with three issues. Chair, three issues for me of concern is the number of consultants that were used, or the number of projects, and also the money that was spent on it. On page 370 of the report, more than 4 million for the Buna awards. I'd like some explanation about that, for an events management company. I presume it's also for the whole program. What will be the parameters and the whole exercise? I first was shocked to think, is that for only one evening? But I presume it won't be. And there's actually two. There's two consultants. That was the previous year. Okay, I remember now. The previous year, 3.2 million was spent on that. So we need just some explanation on that specific one. And it's already been noted that the report on the notes, also a consultant, a lot of money was spent on that. So some explanation why this is necessary it seems as if these consultants are doing work that officials of the department should be doing. And even KwaZulu-Natal, I see that to evaluate the report of them, you know, there wasn't the capacity. So page 2367, the capacity in the department to evaluate that report, so they sourced it out and somebody gave a report on that report. Then the second issue that I would like to touch on is the financials. And my question is then specifically about the 10 million and that mainly, to my mind, led to this qualified audit report, so that we just get some explanation what happened there, what's been done at the moment. I've read somewhere it's been referred for proper legal action, and I would just like to know about it. Then on page 167 of the report, it also says an investigation was conducted by an independent company aimed at identifying individuals within the department who did not disclose their interest in companies that were appointed as service providers for the department. The report was submitted to the accounting officer for further action. So I'd just like to know about what further action were taken. And then also in that regard, there's definitely a challenge for the department because it also says here the department does not have adequate monitoring processes in place to identify deficiencies and ensure that corrective actions have been implemented on the financial report. Then just the last thing that I would like to touch on is the old problem of money being paid over to municipalities but not spent by them. And I must say, I mean, we must congratulate the department. If you look all these years, and even this financial year that has been reported here, they do their utmost best to pay over 100% of the funds, and which, as been said, is about 97-98% of the budget. So the department can't be full. But the department also have a problem that if those municipalities don't comply, and I see that 33 municipalities' money for capacity building, I think, had to be withheld because they didn't comply, then the department can't pay over the money. But my question then specifically is, it seems to me that the money has been paid over, but the municipalities haven't spent it in the financial year. Their financial year, of course, differs. Is the department checking on that money will be spent on what it has been given for, the municipal infrastructure or the capacity building? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Next question.
I don't remember the slide, but the presentation was 165 municipalities were helped to develop the anti-corruption strategy. I just want to check also on the program one, which is falling under monitoring. Is the team that is monitoring over the municipalities on these strategies that they've been formed has a report that will say how is the anti-corruption strategy helping those in municipalities? Taken from the violence that we have in some other municipalities, and also to check whether they will increase the number of those in municipalities, adding those municipalities who have riots in their areas, because all of them, if you check the problem is how they handle their budgets and money.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a feeling that should I pull it to the thank you, Chairperson. I have a feeling also that the department so far has done well. But I have a question, just one question that disturbs me. It's in Program 4, which says a resource pool of service delivery facilitators has been established and is operational in priority municipalities. I would like to find out what does that mean? How many municipalities have been prioritized? Because if that would be the case, I don't think we would be having so many protesters at the moment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is short. Is to the Chief Financial Officer. One question: whether there is a capacity in the third section, or what? I'll call it a section. In charge. Because if you check here, that all everything has gone to the consultant, all this has gone to the consultant. It's a capacity itself. Besides asking the outside to talk to the guys to get the consultant, do the department itself have enough capacity? And also to the deputy director general, to MMKT, well, because she is in charge of monitoring and evaluation. Just to check this monitoring, how far is going to cost? If you are monitoring something, at least there must be something which you can when you monitor something. Of course, we were short here. Then now there's a progress from year to year. I just want to get, because they are doing monitoring and evaluation, but you don't get the actual results there. They are results. The report is fine, good, but I just wanted to check there.
Browsing through the report, things crop up. No problem. Chair, just looking at the report, and look at page 113 of the annual report. Just looking here, for example, there are two tables which reflect the performance of municipalities during two financial years, and they're comparing 07-08 with 08-09. And if you look at mixed spending in the second year, the more recent year, it seems virtually across the board to be worse than the preceding year. For example, the number of municipalities spending 0% doubled. The number of municipalities spending less than 50% goes up by about 50%. The number spending between 15 and 79% is marginally increased, etc. So if that's across the board, it looks like worse performance of municipalities in spending. So that's the question I'd have. And then on page 131, this is the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, and the transfers that are withheld. I'm a bit puzzled by the withholding. I thought the withholding was referred to me, not so much the system improvement. But anyway, be that as it may, I was obviously ignorant. But of the transfers that are withheld, It covers all the provinces of the country, but two provinces, there's zero. Well, at least there's no zero, they're just not mentioned. So presumably the two provinces which are not here had no transfers withheld. So presumably they are perfectly satisfactory. I'm just curious to why if you look at page 131, 132, 133, why two provinces would perform perfectly and the others would all have funds withheld. Just some explanation for that. Thanks.
In the presentation, talking about the two provinces, there's reference to seven municipalities. Two are not mentioned. In the report itself, it's Mpumalanga and another province. What is the other province, and what are the reasons for them? I can't locate a specific area there. But to refer to, I'm just reminded by what Peter is saying about this two could be KZN, Mpumalanga and K, I think it is. Report, yeah. One of my questions, there are two things. I think the question on the reasons for the qualifications, we would like you to give us details about that. We want to understand what was at the heart of the problem, so that we understand how come after such good performance there was this. That's the reason we want to understand it, because we think, I agree with the observations that have been made, that in managing the department's work in, generally, so we've seen a very good performance in overall. But you are also aware, I think you would have picked that up, that often when people speak about this, is the impact of the department on the areas for which it is responsible outside of its immediate control, provinces and municipalities. So, in other words, those interventions that come from the department, that relates, for example, to the capacity of provincial departments to do their work, and then also to the performance of municipalities. There's a range of programs that you are identifying, that you are doing to provide support and so on, but if you were to identify the key variable that speaks to the weakness in this system, where would you place that? So that's an overall question, really. Deputy Minister, I didn't come to the local government in Durban, unfortunately. There was a meeting which I was supposed to attend and to do a report, and I was not able to do that as well. So at that meeting, I won't mention who raised this thing. See, he is supposed to be in this meeting because this is oversight. Instead of being here, assuming that I'm better in Durban, he's been co-opted by the department. So that's why he's at the conference of the department. So he's not here threshing out ideas for oversight responsibility. So when I make the next comment that I'm going to make, you must understand that comment was made. It's an interesting observation in the which has been the question that we've had. What is the impact of urbanization on municipalities, for example? In your overview there's interesting references to what that impact is on municipalities. And so I found that very useful, because it spoke to what I thought we need to be making an assessment of on a continual basis. And it was very helpful to identify the in the main report itself. I'll find it just now. Including the question that Peter asked about the municipalities and ability to collect rates and revenue and so on. There's a very useful reference to it in the document that I found very useful. So the problem of size is that now you must, organization, of course, I must admit, of the way the report is done. Yeah. Okay, I think I'm there. It's on page 39. Okay, that's on page 30, it's on page 38 and on page 39. On page 38, the second paragraph on the second column, okay, of the main report. There's an interesting assessment of the impact of urbanization on the what it calls the reduction in the average size of household, for example, and in the rural, the out-migration of individuals from rural areas and so on. In other words, this what I called in our debate in the House on the property rates bill and the capacity of the rural-urban migration. That's a very useful assessment of that issue there. But also the second point that I found very useful is the impact of the
macro economic policies and the pressures it has on municipalities. That too is very useful. Because, for example, it speaks about those conditions and the overall, the with regard, just to read it briefly, just with regard to the economy in 2008, South African producers were affected by a series of economic shocks, including electricity shortages, rising output costs, higher interest rates, slowing demand. Information shows that this in provinces felt the brunt of global economic slowdown. And so it goes on to explain that this economic development created pressures for increasing municipal taxes and user charges. Okay? And municipalities needed to manage the need for price increases while ensuring the services remain affordable to consumers. Now, that's a very good reflection to be making and so on. And therefore, in responding to these issues, this is the question that we have. And in the strategies, the Deputy Minister, I'm aware that there was a paper that Salga was meant to present on municipal response to the global crisis. Unfortunately, it was not discussed. And so, in a sense, what I'm seeing here is that going forward, there's obviously a need for support to municipalities in responding to these conditions in their areas. It has major implications. So, for example, including your discussions with the Department of Minerals and of Energy in relation to ESCOM and what it is doing there. That has interesting impact on those issues. And the consequences, just further down there, of the impact on rural municipalities and the need for grant funding to those, for them to be able to survive. We do need to get additional information on, in the classification of municipalities, you have high capacity, medium capacity, and low capacity. So I would imagine that rural municipalities largely would fall under the low capacity municipalities. And therefore, going forward in the turnaround strategy, even as a framework, some indication of how conditions there will be treated differently to the rest of the areas and so on. I found that very useful. And then just two quick issues is the... There's an observation about the intergovernmental relations and the report that was given, but also the issue of the fiscal, the intergovernmental fiscal system. It says it currently constrains collaborative working. And this is an area in which I would like to hear some feedback on. It's on page 39, the paragraph before last. We've been talking about this thing. This collaboration and not working in silos is a song you can write just from the lyrics about it in the chamber from 15 years ago. I mean, that's how often we are speaking about it. So you identify it correctly there as well. But what I really want us to zero in on that issue of systems that prevent collaboration, for us to identify what on earth we can do about this. So, because if we don't, then quite frankly, I don't see why we must keep talking about this thing. Those are just some of the immediate comments that I have on the report as a whole. But the transition, Deputy Minister and the Department, of translating some of those. Obviously, it will overlap with what we discuss later on about what is contained in the strategic plan and so on. But some of the lessons of the urban and rural, how we did well in those areas, if we did, and the mistakes there. Because as I recall, and this was our worry about the Giani example, that the urban and rural nodes were meant to be sites for learning by governments of how to work together in an integrated manner.
and I'm really interested in finding a distillation of those lessons succinctly, two or three of them that you can pick out from what were the good lessons for working together as different government departments in the rural nodes and or urban nodes that can be taken forward to resolve these issues that I've just referred to of collaboration, effective collaboration. Can we just get a sense of that from the work that you've done? Yes, okay. But then you want to add a question? Yeah, go ahead.
On page 277 of the report, it talks about the percentage of available funds spent by municipalities. Now, if you look at Mpumalanga, the places that have got really low percentages are fundamentally the towns where there's serious problems at the moment. And I'd like the department to tell us, they get reports of spending from municipalities on a quarterly basis, and how do they intervene when the municipalities aren't spending, you know, when they're only spending 43% of the money that they receive? Or how does it work? Or do they just monitor the chaos and then the chaos happens? You know, how does it work? Are you just going to tell us that these municipalities failed to spend 90% of their budget? Are you just going to tell us at the end, or is there a process in place that you can say, you know, you can flag these municipalities knowing that something bad is going to come if they keep the spending so low? Thank you.
Deputy Minister.
Yeah, I think I'll just make some generic points and hand over to me and the team. Firstly, we want to thank you for your good wishes and your acknowledgement that the department has performed. I want to say that last week I thought the department exceeded itself, you know, in pulling together the Indaba and local government turnaround strategy with such short period leading to it and so on. So I think it has performed overall well, but clearly it's not good enough, and clearly we need to do better, and clearly we will seek to do so, and clearly we'll help us to do exactly that. I want to say one of the general points you're raising is something we need to address, you see, as we're entering this policy review process. On the one hand, there are people who will say that local government is distinct and relatively autonomous, and it must be given the space, you know, to do what it wants. On the other hand, people will say, why is the national government doing more to monitor and edge and nudge people and so on? And I think with this policy review, we're going to seek to find the balance together, working collectively with yourselves and civil society. But I think in general, the approach of the minister certainly now is that we can't leave municipalities to stew. If they're not performing, we have to intervene more proactively. Obviously, we're bound by the constitution and court judgments in this regard. But I think maybe the department wants to comment on that general point. The second is on what lessons, it's led to the same point being made. What lessons have we drawn from the urban and rural nodes in facilitating intergovernmental relations? We're plunging into Guyana now under a new administration, but what have we drawn from the past? And I think those two questions are the first ones that to me and then we want to respond to, which I think are quite useful. I think I'll hand over to me to deal with those things for now, and then we'll respond specifically to some of the questions. Clearly, if there is a theme in the other issues raised, I think it's generally to me about non-performance and what are we doing about it at municipal level.
So, just before you proceed, that, it occurs to me that what we haven't asked, for example, in the report, there is reference to the legislation that was handled during the year. What we don't hear, and which I'm really interested in, there's been a number of court cases whose results, quite frankly, sitting here, I'm not aware of, and we are supposed to be monitoring that ourselves. But I would like to hear from yourself whether there is any internal monitoring of legislation as it relates to local government in the courts and the decisions that are taken that affect the work and so on. So as a specific component of the reporting that you do, that would be useful just to get a sense on. Thanks. Okay.
Thanks, Deputy Minister, Chairperson, and Honourable Members. I may have done the presentation, but you're going to respond to the questions collectively with the rest of my colleagues. So I'll respond to the questions that I'm able to respond to. And thanks, Chairperson, for responding to the first question. Just to support it, we submitted the annual report of the department on the 30th of September to Parliament.
Not because of coffee,
no, I know. We've been very consistent about that over the years. There was a question from Honorable Smith on what entails the 80% that does not achieve. I don't have the actual data with me. I'm sure colleagues will indicate, but just a few examples of that is that we track the performance of the organization throughout the year, and we created space for branches to indicate where they feel that they are not going to deliver a particular output by the end of the year. If I may just refer to my branch, other colleagues will talk to issues pertaining to their branch. We had planned to develop the project management system in the past financial year, and that required resources in the form of people and money. But unfortunately, we couldn't deliver that on time because the process of filling posts was disrupted with the reorganization of the organization that started when the minister joined last year. So it's a project that had to stand over. But I'm sure other colleagues will speak to a few others. There's a concern that there's too much reliance on consultants. The CFO's office will help me, but if I may just explain that, if you consider the organizational form or design of the department when it was still called DPLG, you will recall that we were centrally focused. It was a central model which was intended to develop policies and monitor the implementation of policies. The actual support on implementation on the ground was not considered in the organogram. And we had to stretch ourselves, honestly, over the years to play that role as well. Hence the reliance on the use of consultants, because we had to find partners outside of the department to assist us with implementation in municipalities. We've worked with partners that really we had to pay in the form of consultants, but there are also partners like your DBSA that we did not necessarily have to pay that supported us. We appointed service delivery facilitators. So the bulk of the budget with regards to consultants really was with interventions that we implemented in municipalities. But the CFO will respond to some of those issues. The number of municipalities where skills audit was conducted, I indicated in the presentation that this is a long-term project. It's an incremental approach. We started the project some few years ago. I'm sure if we look, I don't have the figures, but if we look at the collective total figure since the inception of the project, it's far more than the 15 that we are reflecting here. The 15 are just for the 2008 financial year. The other thing is that the process of skills audit is not an easy process. It's individual-based. It's about individuals within municipalities. It largely depends on the cooperation of municipalities. So the nature of this work is a support. We identify service providers that work with municipalities to undertake this work. But perhaps, and Deputy Minister, if I may propose that on this question we come back with the actual figures over the years, and not necessarily for the financial year. DM, I had hoped that you will respond to Honorable Smith's question on the leadership environment vis-à-vis the appointment of the DG. I'm sure you'll come back to that. Or do you want to respond?
I don't know. That actually is with the Minister and Cabinet. In fact, only today I was asked about the matter. We are proceeding quite actively. We've got a whole lot of applications and there's been a shortlisting process, and I know the Ministry is very keen to finalize this matter very shortly, so I think within the next 4 to 6 weeks it will be reasonable to finalize the matter.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Honorable Smith, the question on the why we got a qualified report this time, the CFO's office is going to respond.
What's the question?
Yeah, but there were follow-up questions to that as well. But you are the first to raise it. We'll respond to that. You also raised a question with regard to how we're integrating our M&E processes to the rest of government. There's what we call the coordinating departments. It's the Presidency, Public Service Commission, Public Service and Administration, National Treasury, and ourselves. We have established a committee that deals with reporting and monitoring of government work. throughout. We interact with sector departments. We're supposed to be guided by the MNE framework, but I don't know if members have had the opportunity to look at the framework. It doesn't assist with respect to the authors. It doesn't say anything. So each department was then instructed to start the process from scratch, develop their own policies and frameworks, and develop their MNE model. So many of us have been doing that. What we're doing in the current financial year is to develop the MNE policy. It has been, we've been very weak in the absence of a policy that gives us authority to undertake the work. So we're hoping that we'll bring that policy to Parliament at some point. The issue on tariff hikes, colleagues from other branches will respond. The concern with regard to the performance of the Commission on Traditional Leadership and Disputes, the Minister has raised concerns with regard to the understanding of the work of the Commission by the public. His argument is that the Commission is unknown, and he was comparing it, for example, to the Human Rights Commission, that whether the Human Rights Commission is effective or not. But people know that there's a Human Rights Commission, and they can refer issues to it, whereas this other commission is unknown. But they are working with the Commission to ensure that it gets popularized, there's advocacy on their work, and that they're beginning to do some meaningful work on that. The ISRDP and the point that the Deputy Minister referred to, the lessons learned from that, there were a number of studies on the impact of the program that were undertaken. I can't state at this point in time the lessons learned and how we're going to utilize that. So maybe that's another question where we can come back to committee members. We don't have anybody from that branch present in the meeting. There were comments from Honorable Dorman.
Sorry, Julie, before you proceed from that one, the question of the lessons is the lessons about government, how government learned to work together, as that was the original intention, that they are not intended just to deal with poverty, but also poverty dealt with by a government that works in an integrated manner, whether you were able to draw those lessons. That's specifically what lessons we are talking about. When you come back.
Thanks for that clarity. I think the question also relates to how we've managed to implement the IGR Act, because it deals with issues of coordination and cooperation. And the assessment, and it's informed by the assessment that you have just conducted in municipalities, is that we've not done well collectively as government. And the key culprits with regard to that failure is national and provincial governments as compared to municipalities. The failure of the two governments, national and provincial, to coordinate and work with each other has impacted on the negative reports that we have received with regard to the performance of municipalities. The burden has been more felt by municipalities, but as compared to the other two sectors. So one of the issues that the turnaround strategy is seeking to respond to is the issue of coordination and cooperation. The examples that we have cited is the policy development process, how national departments work in silos to develop that, and only to discover at the implementation phase that there's contradictions in the system. There's issues of unfunded mandate that emanate from those policies. So all those issues were discussed at the Indaba last week. They've been identified consistently in the reports of all the nine provinces, based on the studies that we've conducted. So we're hoping that we'll find ways of responding to the issues. Honorable Dorman, you congratulated us. We appreciate that. You raised the concern with regard to consultants as well. I think I've partly responded to the issues.
But
old Karl Marx, when he heard a friend of his, old man Bebel, being complimented, "Hey, old Bebel, what foolish thing have you done to deserve enemy praise?" No. Look, the truth. No, the truth is the truth about it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No.
Okay, the concern was raised with regard to the expenditure on the management of the Vuna Award process. It is true to say that there's this huge cost incurred with regard to that event, but they are not necessarily for the one evening event. They include the expenditure for the coordination of the project throughout the next nine provinces. You'll recall, Honorable Dorman, that before we go to the annual event, there's this process in each of the provinces. And to ensure that there's consistency in the approach in the system, we thought that it will be useful to use one service provider from national, working with officials from national departments to visit each province for the coordination of this work. And that's really what escalates the cost. The other issues, obviously, is issues of venue, which are quite expensive in housing. I'm sure the same problem is here with Cape Town. The other issues that you raised, colleagues have noted them. They'll respond. The Honorable Shengeta, you asked the question with regard to the successes on the anti-corruption. I don't have the figures here, but we can respond on how this progress has been recorded. It's being monitored. We report, I'll say, every second month to Parliament. It's part of the government program of action. The Deputy Minister came from a meeting where they were briefing Parliament earlier on the performance of the governance and administration cluster. This work, Cabinet earlier on. This work is work that is undertaken collectively with Department of Public Service and Administration within that cluster. So there is reports and consistent monitoring on that. Honorable Ditsetelo asked a question with regard to the resource pool. The service delivery facilitators, ma'am, were appointed to assist about 139 municipalities. It's a project that started in 2006. It's municipalities that were identified to be in distress and needed personal hands-on support. So these SDFs were appointed to assist with that. Most of them is really in the form of partners and stakeholders who provide people, experts. For example, we're working with ILIMA. The company is under Old Mutual. They're based in Cape Town. They've given us their retired managers, old retired managers with experience in project management, in financial management, and other fields to support the project. We're working with DBSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa, also to support the project. We're also working with SAICI, the institutions of engineers. We've pulled back some of the retired engineers into this. So it's a combination of people. Within the department, we only had 12 people that were appointed and paid for from the budget of the department, but the rest was support in kind and otherwise, also from the donor community. Honorable Machoba, you asked the question on the capacity of the CFO. They'll respond to that. But you also asked the question with regard to the actual results of the M&E function. In the report, I refer to the number of the reports that we are producing. One of the roles is the organizational performance. What we are doing here today is the outcome of the function of the branch. We are responsible firstly for organizational performance, but we also ensure that municipalities report their performance with regard to the Systems Act, Section 46 of the Systems Act. The issue that was raised by some of the members with regard to coordination and cooperation compromises this work in as far as municipalities are concerned. And we're hoping that this new model of assessing the performance of municipalities, developing a turnaround strategy with regard to that, will assist us to shape and commit different stakeholders to report and assess the performance of municipalities. It's a joint responsibility between ourselves, sector departments, and provinces, but we have progress that we can point to. The work was previously informed by the five-year agenda that I referred to, and there are reports for that we have produced and presented to Cabinet. Honorable Smith came back to ask questions with regard to expenditure. The colleagues will respond. And then Chairperson, maybe I should stop here and brief and allow other colleagues to respond. Thanks.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think there are two questions that came from Honorable.
But I want to see you also. Okay. Okay. No, there are two questions that I want to respond to from Honorable Smith. The first one had to do with discrepancies between the figures in terms of access to basic services and in relation to the figures on the slide there on free basic services. That was on page 17, I guess. But the issue is that there's no contradiction with regard to this. If 80% of households had access to electricity, it does not necessarily mean that indigenous households should have access to the same, you know, percentage as well, because that is the 50% of indigenous households that had access to free basic, you know, electricity. Same as for water, that 88% of households had access to piped water, but of the total indigenous households in the country, only 75% indigenous households had access to free basic water, because as for indigenous, we calculate indigenous in the whole, you know, municipality, for instance, even including areas where there's no access to basic, you know, services. The question relating to the spending of the municipal infrastructure grant and what is being done with regard to that. You know, last year we set a target that by September 2008, all municipalities should have spent 40% of their MIG allocation. Now, the number of municipalities had not met that target by that time. But there are two factors here to be considered. When we are beginning to panic ourselves as national in September, remember that is our second quarter in terms of our national financial year, but it is the first quarter for the municipalities. Now, in December, it is their second quarter. Now, we are reporting against 31 March, which indeed excludes the fourth quarter of the municipalities. So in that way, we begin to report on progress before the end of the financial years of the municipalities. Now, you've got, you know, municipalities that will say, you know, you can't stop, you know, this particular funding because we still have 3 months, you know, to implement this, and we know that we'll be able to manage. But then that is not where we leave it. There are support teams in each province to make sure that municipalities, you know, spend on the municipal infrastructure, you know, grant. And also as a matter of, you know, trying to impress upon municipalities that they need to be, you know, spending this. In February of this year, the minister sent out letters to all municipalities that were underspending, indicating the implications, you know, for underspending. Now, we still have to, you know, go back after March to look at, you know, what has been the consistency with regard to spending. But also there are issues around spending that have to do with capacity of municipalities, of course, but also in terms of planning, you know, issues, that municipalities are not really having multi-year plans to implement the municipal infrastructure grant, of course. So these are piecemeal, you know, solutions for infrastructure, and in order to address that particular problem, we have asked municipalities to develop what we term the comprehensive infrastructure plans, which look, you know, ahead in terms of the plans that municipalities, you know, must have, so that whatever expenditure they have is tied to a long-term plan, you know, with regard to that. So these are some of the actions and solutions that we're beginning to think around and assist municipalities, you know, in coming to terms with.
Sorry to interrupt. I think my concern is not so much that there is underspending, which I understand. Yeah. I understand. My question was why it was worse this year than the previous year. Because the figures that you give in the report suggest a steady worsening of the situation rather than an improvement. So the question I would ask is why in 2008-09 are the figures worse than a comparable period for the year before? That I'm not quite sure I understand. I understand.
Are those figures of the same period?
Yes.
This is what I'm trying to understand according to the template here. Yeah.
think there's an answer in the report that the department has sharpened up its control measures. So they don't pay over that money because the municipalities are not performing. I read that somewhere.
Is that the answer?
There was a process of closed monitoring. I think it's on the municipal infrastructure grant.
Yes.
There was a process of monitoring closely the ability of municipalities to spend that money. So the department, working with National Treasury, put on adopted stricter measures for the past 2 years. In an instance where municipalities are spending, that will obviously proceed. But where indications are that municipalities were not going to be able to spend on time, either support was provided based on the reasons, or funds were withdrawn and diverted to another municipality or province that could spend it. So there was that process that was used to force two municipalities, firstly, to plan better and to commit both human resources in particular towards project management and ensuring that projects are implemented to finality.
Tambo Municipality was angry with you
because
when they were ready, you are no longer ready with the money to come back. So you guys, you must practice what you preach. If you want quick responsiveness to the issues, you too must be quick to bring back. So we advise them, you must always know what goes up never comes down. So just make sure it never goes up, it stays with you. So in a sense, that's the issue. Okay, next question, responses.
Thanks, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. I think my colleague, Ms. Mkhedi, did a great job of responding to some of the questions that relate to citizen capacity building. But maybe just to add, in relation to the general question of the use of consultants, in particular in relation to the putting together of this annual report, I would like to put the honourable at ease that it was actually staff within the department that put together the sections of the report that relate to their work, and the consultants were not engaged for purposes of putting together the annual report. But on the audit, there was a question in relation to why only 15 municipalities were involved in the skills audit. Obviously, I think we already indicated that we, as a department, had inadequate capacity to deal with most of our programs. So that was one of the reasons. But to make this point more concretely, there is just one individual, a senior manager, that's responsible for the skills audit work. So all that could be afforded in the past year was the 15 municipalities. However, in response to what are we going to be doing in order to make sure that we cover more municipalities in this work, what we have done is to put together a web-based tool, and we are now providing training to municipalities to enable them to undertake these skills audits themselves, so that our role would only be that of supervising the skills audit processes as well as monitoring the extent to which it's being done. Also, in relation to the work around the skills audit, the question was raised whether we're working with the local government sector. Indeed, we are. Actually, the local government sector is funding this work, and they're also a part of the steering committee that helps inform and give direction to this whole work. And then there was a question in relation again to the withholding of the allocations on the Municipal Assistance Improvement Grant, and whether we are actually looking in instances where these allocations are made, whether we are checking whether the funds are being used for what they're supposed to be used for. Indeed, that is done, and the municipalities that do not receive the funds because they are failing to spend their allocations are identified through their failure to report. And in instances where they do submit reports, and the reports indicate that the funds have not been spent appropriately, then those municipalities are engaged with, and support is provided to guide them in terms of how the funds needed to have been spent. And with regard to the kind of support that is financial support that is provided to municipalities, I think there are three broad areas which are usually covered in this regard. One has to do with the management of assets, the establishment or the development of assets, of asset registers and maintaining this and updating this, as well as the establishment of internal controls, including the establishment of internal audit committees in instances where these do not exist, but also importantly to ensure that municipalities respond to issues that are raised by the Auditor General. And in instances where municipalities have failed to do this, the department works with them to make sure that they address all the issues that the Auditor General highlights in his report. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson and honorable members, I'm just going to deal with two issues. First, the issue of capacity within the CFO's office. I think within the CFO's office, we use very minimal consultants, almost none. It's the rest of the department that is using a lot of consultants. In the CFO's office, we don't normally use consultants. Now, coming to the question of the qualification, let me just explain what we did in this current financial year. We knew that there was a question of credibility on our fixed asset register. What we did, we look at all our locations and do a physical count of all the assets that are within the department in all our locations. We took the barcodes of the assets, and once we have completed a list of all the assets that we have, we compare that list of the assets we have, that we have with the asset register. We find that when we compare the two, the asset register and the list, there were assets that were not on the asset register, but we could find them on the floor. Second, we find out there were assets that were in the register that could not be traced from the location. With the first, with the second item, assets that were not on the register that could not be traced, we had to find out what actually happened. There were all sorts of reasons that were given that some of the assets were donated to schools, but the asset register could not be updated. We were not sure of the number of the assets that were donated. But what we did with all those assets that we could not trace, we had to dispose them. And we couldn't satisfy the Auditor General what happened to those assets. That is the first lot. The second lot, there were assets that we could find on the floor that were not on the register. We had a dilemma there because we had to capture those assets on the register. We had to find the value of those assets. Some of those assets, they go back to 2002-2001. It was impossible for us to find the value. What we did, we sat down with the Auditor General and explained to them that in order to capture these assets on the asset register, we had to find a scientific way of deriving the value for those assets. We look at similar assets which were purchased in the same year and also on the barcodes that were issued on that similar year. Based on that, we said if, for example, there were computers that with the similar barcodes that were purchased on that financial year, we use the values of the assets that were purchased that year to put a value on the assets that were found. That the Auditor General says we couldn't do that. We had to go and find the invoices, which was nearly impossible for us to go and find all those invoices. Some of them were in
were purchased in 2012, I say. Hence, the Auditor General says he has got a problem with the valuation of the assets. Even if those assets we could put a 1 rand value, the Auditor General would still have a problem. But we didn't just transfer the value of those assets. We had to find a scientific way of putting a value, which we think it was fair and reasonable. Secondly, another issue here relates to the prior adjustment. Within the government, there was a peculiar way of recording assets before. You could record the assets and only addition. We find out throughout the number of years what was reflected in the annual financial statement, and also we discussed this with the Auditor General. It's incorrect, because we're only adding, not subtracting. We said that in order to truly reflect the asset register, there has to be opening balance, addition, disposal, and closing balance. We couldn't have a disposal. It was only opening balance and addition. Then, from many years, we have been accumulating incorrect balance on the on our financial statement. We said in order to correct this, if we are fairly comfortable that what we have now, after we've counted all our assets and determined the disposal and the addition for this year, and reconciled back to the opening balance, whatever the difference between the opening balance this year and closing balance last year, it has to be assets which were not properly captured in the previous year. Hence, we had to put an adjustment in the previous year. This was a peculiar way of accounting, which I only find out here in the government. When you count for assets, you have to have the opening balance, addition, disposal, and the closing balance. That was not done up to 2005 and 6. Then we had that historical incorrect balance, which we could only correct when we do a physical count on what we have and compare physical what we have with the asset register. Had we not done that exercise, I believe we wouldn't be in a situation that we are in now. It's because we decided that this year we have to have the fixed asset register corrected by physically counting the assets. And also on the assets that we didn't know where they are. Some of those assets, if you look at the register, they were purchased in 1998, 1999, 2000. We really don't know what happened to those assets. Hence, we have to put the adjustment to correct the register based on what we have physically counted this current financial year. That is how we got a qualification on the fixed asset. It's mainly because we tried to correct once and for all our fixed asset register in this current financial year. The problems that we have are not problems relating to this year, are the problems that relate to previous years, but were only discovered in this current financial year. I would like Mr. Sikaba to deal with the issue of 10 million on irregular expenditure.
Thank you, sir, and honorable members. I would like to refer the honorable members on page 225 of the annual report, where this detail of this irregular expenditure is explained. There's a note there, note number 26.2, on page 225 of the annual report. This irregular expenditure, as it's detailed here, you see that 3.1 million of this 10 million is in respect of lease of office equipment. Normally, with the leasing of office equipment, National Treasury has got what we call transversal contracts that all departments, national and provincial, participate in. So we can only lease office equipment that with service providers that have been contracted by National Treasury through their contract management unit. But where, for instance, the equipment, they are not in that on the national tender, what we would do then is departments are given the the delegation to deal directly with the service providers. So the equipment that we are using here are high volume sort of printers that are printing predominantly color material. If you see most of the reports that we distribute in our engagement with our stakeholders, we are using our own internal sort of printing services. This is the equipment then that you are leasing with the service providers, but these service providers are not on the database of National Treasury. So unfortunately, we had a sort of a disagreement with the Auditor General, hence this is here, because they were saying we need to apply from National Treasury for condolment, whereas the delegation was given to the accounting officer to deal directly with service providers if these equipment are not on the National Treasury transversal contract. So this, hence we have applied to National Treasury for the condolment of this 3.1.
Before you proceed, was that delegation in writing?
Yes, Chair, there is a circular that was issued by the Office of the Accountant General.
And you're saying that the Auditor General, despite him seeing that, still fell that way?
Yes.
Okay.
And then on the second one, which is 6.7 million, that relates to non-compliance with procurement policies. In most cases, here, for instance, if I can split, about 682,000 here relates to transactions where, for instance, we didn't get pre-quotations to the service, to procure those services. In some cases, we would, because the minimum requirement is that there must be a minimum of three quotations. But in some cases, we will only get two and no response, and we need to continue with the procurement. So they would continue with the procurement without having the third service provider. So AG will query that because it says we didn't request the three quotations. And then about 3.8 million of this relates to where the AG didn't get a tax clearance on the file of the service provider. This relates mostly just to our document management, because in some of these cases we had finally sort of got the tax clearance certificate. Normally, when these service providers are registered on our database, we would request all the information during that registration. But because the tax clearance certificate expires, so AG insists that we must request, when we procure services to that, we must request another tax clearance certificate. So that also there is just a question of a difference of opinion. But what we do, we have subsequently sort of documented these tax clearance certificates to AG, but they said during their audit, I mean, they were not there, and that is their own, that is their report. But we will condone this expenditure within the structures in the department, because we do have delegation in terms of the circular that was issued by the Accountant General. In some cases, we do have agent procurement that we have to procure things on an agency basis. And what normally is required is that the project manager responsible for that project will request approval for agent procurement. So in some cases, the official is in the province, and there's an agent situation that needs to be done there. So he would do the service using either the province's or the supplier database. But because the payment has got to be done through our national department, so he would only request the approval of that agent when the services have been rendered. And this is where also AG would come in and say, these services were procured without first receiving the necessary approval. But subsequent to that, these are normally sent to our lead committee for ratification. In other words, the approval is done after the transaction has been. So in most cases, these will be cleared. The minor one is more the insurance of finance of vehicles. National Treasury, as far back as 1999-2000, they made a ceiling that a department can only insure up to 250,000. I mean, it's almost 8 years now, but that amount has not been revised, but things have been going up. So we exceeded our insurance for 250,000 for vehicle by almost 6,000 rand. And that 6,000 rand from National Treasury, from the Auditor General, is irregular expenditure. So we have also put this to the attention of the Office of National Treasury to review the ceiling on the insurance over motor vehicles. Those, Chair, are mostly the sort of the resultant results from the AG sort of reflecting this irregular expenditure on our financials. We are in the process of condoning some of this expenditure. We are also liaising with the National Treasury to do the condoning which relates to this list of office equipment that are not in their contract database. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, any additional comments on that? Yeah, go ahead.
Not an additional comment to what Mr. Gaba, but just only one, I think it was raised earlier on the non-disclosure, the report to the accounting officer and what action has been taken. There was one instance where we have requested a formal forensic investigation. And that is underway. We've also, Chairperson, honourable members, worked with our internal risk management team already this year to look at how we can improve the awareness amongst both the SMS, who are obliged to disclose annually, but also the non-SMS members with a higher financial interest and or a receiving related party information. Then we are working to improve the understanding and the procedure to deal with non-disclosure.
Chandler, there was one last question on the impact of the electricity tariff hike. Can I request Selga to ask this?
Yes, yes, yes.
Thanks, Chair. A follow-up question to both the directors again. Again, because I'm not a little bit satisfied. There is the municipalities which have collapsed now. Of course, the amount which have been granted to those municipalities, like in the Eastern Cape, Amahlathi, Umnquma, Ngqushu, Ambashe. Lately, now also the Grapevine, the no more service at all.
I even spoke to the minister. I said, what can we do there? Because there's a money which we have been to those municipalities. There's no stability there. That's point number one. There are the court cases and all that, but now they rely on department. What are we saying as department? Because the money is involved, no more services at all. The money which we went to do those municipalities, I just wanted to get them. Maybe I will have another follow-up question. Tables in effect.
Yeah, Chair, I appreciate Selga's response to the electricity question, but in fact, my question was targeted at the department, and the reason was because I work under the assumption that if the equitable share is funding free basic services and the cost of the services rises, then presumably the central government would then transfer a larger amount to compensate for that. That's the implied question. And the question is that what happens, and if so, how and where is it reflected in the report? Well,
I agree with you.
No, I didn't.
Did you say?
Well, I wanted somebody to say, well, if you look at page 52, it'll say electricity costs an extra 300 million, and this was transferred in terms of the equitable share in the appropriation in October, or whatever it was. I'm not quite sure how it's done.
Okay.
And then I've got some more questions there, please.
Okay. Can we ask other questions as well? Maybe we should. Tomorrow. I know. The question about the legal uncertainty that AG mentioned in the case or something. What letter? Who's
it? They don't understand your last question.
You see, you selected to show 10 million. And not the one above the 10 million. The above the 10 million are above the 37 million. There's a question there about the legal uncertainty that the department is facing the number of legal issues.
So maybe while they are checking, can you respond to the question
and then you must also say about the.
The question that was asked by Honorable Machoba with regard to services that are collapsing in municipalities and what we're doing about it. If you had maybe followed the news, you would have noticed that already the minister has started to institute interventions in some of municipalities that were identified. We're doing this mindful of the fact that, firstly, this is the responsibility of provinces to take action where services are collapsing, where there's maladministration in municipalities. But based on the report and the assessments that we have conducted, we have classified the stability, the financial viability, the existence of municipalities beyond this phase. And we have identified those municipalities that need immediate attention, those that can survive on their own. And already, if you look at municipalities in the Northwest, there's interventions where administrators were sent to go and take over the responsibility of the municipality. So similar processes are going to be followed in the rest of the municipalities throughout the provinces. With regard to the one municipality that you mentioned in Eastern Cape, I think it's Mnquma. You will recall the minister tried to institute that intervention, and he was challenged through court. So that process is still underway. It's not finalized, but we are responding to those. We've been able to identify those municipalities that are in distress. The municipalities that provinces are funding them 100% today, they don't have any hope of generating revenue on their own. So we've identified all those municipalities that need much more aggressive support than others.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I will repeat my question. I would like to know regarding the interventions, where are all this additional capacity going to be coming from? Where is this additional staff that's going to be going to all these municipalities to assist? I didn't realize we had so much spare capacity that we could take to all these different municipalities. And at what cost? And to whom?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to quickly come in on a response from Dumi. I know it's Dumi or Dumi because now I'm Dumi. Okay. So I'm just worried and just want to comment the comment in fact of saying my first question was I was referring it on monitoring to avoid all these non-functional and municipalities who fell into distress. It's because of EE lack of EE integrated approach, EU coordination from national province to assist the municipalities. I would like maybe the department to check and maybe to re-strategize their monitoring strategies on not to send the people who assist the municipalities while they are in some trouble. Just for the whole year or for the whole duration of the period of those municipalities to have a check on and monitoring all the municipalities to avoid these problems we are facing now. Which are just a comment that I just want to go back to monitoring and evaluation so that they could strengthen and deploy more members to monitor all the municipalities and assist where they can't discrepancy.
Yeah. Except that, Honorable Dumi, then they would be taking over from, if it's in your province, no man's work. So we are retrenching him effectively if we do that. So, and similarly in every province, that would be the effect. What we must check is how much pressure do they bring to bear at all on the MEC and his department to do their job. And when they fail, what you're saying may then be justified. But from what we heard about the strategy, I don't know. But the answers might be there, but I was just worried about we have a system in place, and if you don't work that plan, then we won't see why it's not working. So let's check if the relationship between the department and the provinces is not working, what are the reasons for that? That's how I would propose we handle it. Okay, the question I was asking earlier on is on page 163, right at the top on significant uncertainties. That's number 50. That's when I was saying that we should come back to it. Now, when you respond to it, respond also to the other one, which is not in that section, but it's about the internal audit committee and the replacement of one of the members of the committee who, what's the word you use, legalese, premature termination of his job or as an audit committee member. Why did that audit committee member leave? There is some reference to the minister accepting his or her replacement. So what I didn't understand is no explanation for why that person left. I'm curious. Go ahead with the ones that you can respond to, sir.
Sir, an honorable member. The one on top of page 163 is in respect of the contingent liabilities, which were required that we should disclose in the financial statement. The details of that are on page 324. The total amount in respect of all the cases against the department is 4.7 million. There are three cases against the department. They comprise a total amount of 4.7 million. Those are the cases that the department is currently involved in. Page 324. That is the breakdown.
So what issue has there with the general board here?
No, it's required that by law that if there, we will not show what will be the outcome of those cases. If they go against the government, then it means that in the next financial year we have to put that amount as an expense. But right now we are not certain how are they going to come up with it. It's a requirement that they should know that.
Chair, there was a question raised with regard to the support and the capacity to implement the turnaround strategy asked by Honorable Member.
No. Okay. It's relevant. Okay, I want to go to
on specifically those things about, you know, I can think of it. Yeah, as I mentioned.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say is that considering that we don't have the necessary capacity ourselves, we've tried in the past, we've used the model of the service delivery facilitators that I've referred to. We've drawn lessons from that approach. What we did with the INDABA last week, we invited a broader pool of stakeholders to come and share with them some of the challenges as identified during the assessment process, and trying to mobilize them to commit the nature of support that they think they will be able to assist with. Most stakeholders are going to make formal submissions with regard to the support that they think they'll be able to give to the department to implement that work. But the other reality is that we're not going to be able to implement the strategy in its entirety within a short space of time. So we're trying to categorize and prioritize what is implementable, perhaps within a year, what should be implementable medium term and long term, so that as and when we receive commitments of support, we are able to prioritize and strategize them according to reasonable time frames. But we are also mindful of the fact that it's not something that we're going to achieve even in the next 5 years, if you look at the state of some of the municipalities. So it's a partnership, firstly, between the three spheres of government, national, provinces, and municipalities, and outside stakeholders, and many of them were called to the INDABA last week.
Okay. Any other comments from
the comment, Chair. I think Domen now understand, won't go to the chamber and ask a question on municipalities that are collapsing.
Chair, I did ask a question on the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant. I'm not sure I understood the answer, but when I'm rereading the section of the report, I must say I'm completely bamboozled. I don't understand what the report says. Now, maybe I'm illiterate, or maybe there are a lot of things. Well, from page 131 to 150, the whole thing makes no sense to me. In other words, none of the figures correlate. It's the kind of document, when you read it, you have to know in advance what it means in order to see the answers. Because if I'm a layman reading this, it's complete gobbledygook, to be honest with you. And let me just start with it. You start at the top, table one, and it's got a summary of MSIG transfers to the provinces, right? So the schedule allocation is 200 million, and they transfer 200 million. So that 200 million, presumably, would correlate with all the figures that follow subsequently. So you start at page 133, and it says, what did the Eastern Cape get? Well, the answer to that is on page 135. The Eastern Cape, the transfer to the provinces was 29,595. But it says on the first page, table one, that the amount transferred was actually 27,868. And for all of the provinces, the figures of the actual transfer to the provinces on table one is different to the amount that actually transferred to the provinces broken down further on. That's the first thing I don't understand. Even though all the figures come to 200 million, supposedly, I don't understand that. Then on page 131, between the two tables, there's a statement which I find incomprehensible. I'm sure I'm missing something. It says, in terms of the MSIG, the number of municipalities where transfers were withheld was 37, signifying an improvement compared to 25. Well, to me, that's exactly opposite of an improvement. 25 to 37 is a worsening, not an improvement. It says, this increase indicates the extent of control measures the department has enforced. Sorry, to me, it's incomprehensible. Then, Chair, I look at the first. Then I've got next is Table 2B, MSIG transfers withheld per municipality, and it goes province by province. And as I said earlier, that was my question. Why are two provinces not there? There are two provinces missing. So be that as it may, they're not there. So then you say, okay, those are the amounts of transfer which is withheld. Now, the way I understand something, if a transfer is withheld, it means money is due to you, but it's not given to you because you don't qualify or something happens. So instead of going to you, it doesn't go to you. Fine, if that's what it means. But then when you look at the tables following, where all the
places where it was withheld. Take the first one, Eastern Cape, EC101. The amount withheld is 735. In other words, they didn't get it. It's withheld. But you look at the table on page 133, and you start, and you start paying for all of these places. EC133, Kamabu, 735, Zadora, the actual transfer is 35, that's to the province, then spent. Amount transferred to municipality, 735. But on the previous page, it says it didn't get it. But here it says it did get it. And it only spent 2.2%. Okay, that's lousy spending. It spent 2.2%. But it actually says it was physically transferred to municipality. But the previous table says it was withheld. The transfer was withheld. Doesn't mean it was clawed back or didn't get there or what. I don't understand. Then, Chair, you go through the tables. And again, I can understand why you'd want to withhold it or claw it back. I mean, some of these places spend virtually nothing. They spend zero. And I just, you know, the first ones, if I just take Eastern Cape, the first three municipalities listed, EC101, 104, 109, they spent 2.2%, 0%, and 0%. Cool, withhold it, they're not spending it. But then later on, you get places that spent 95%, and that's also withheld. Another one spent 1,004, I'm sure it means 104, spent 104%, also withheld. 89% also withheld. And there are others which spent zero, which are not withheld. So, you know, I read this whole thing and I look at it and say, what this does it mean? Okay, there we are.
And then clarify the mystery.
Yeah, I like the mystery to be clarified.
Yeah.
The point by Honorable Smith has been clearly made. We are unfortunately not able to respond to your issues. The person who's respond, or the unit that deals with MSIG is not here. They are working with the NCOP currently. So can I request that you come back on the phone to the committee? You always do.
There are monies which were spent on commission called, I don't want to use that name, I forget.
Claims and disputes.
Yeah, now the very problem now is within that land, that claim and dispute. So you are spending money on what you are doing, but there's a serious problem now with that one. Because you created a commission, you gave them what they are supposed to do halfway, and then you decided to leave that one. We do not really go go down. There are matches there. Luckily, I brought the card to the minister. So that this department is crucial to have. If you see a match, this department is also involved. There are matches there in case, whereas the money has been spent. No. That what is your plan to require that? Because people are saying that Machoba, in this committee, there's a serious problems with the cause. There are money in the involved. When are you going to finish after that? This is Act number 41 of 2003. If you spend money there. It's Act number 41 of 2003.
In respect of this, I should point out that we have come before this committee and previously explained that the work of that commission was far from satisfactory. And we are appalled, actually. And we actually asked Parliament to take us to task. And you're doing exactly that. So I think that there's no excuse, really. There were some problems, as you know, and I must take some responsibility. The chairperson was an MEC at the time. Peter and I must take some measure of responsibility. We passed an act that was not workable in some respects. For example, it is presented to us that, you see, because the commission was not able to set up committees in the provinces, it was unable to function as fast as it might otherwise do. In fact, literally the commission, the national commission, had to go from province to province. Whereas what we're providing for in the very act that's before the NCOP allows for a five-person commission to actually appoint provincial committees. and members of the five-person commission to oversee the work of the committees. Moreover, it provides for some of these claims and disputes to be resolved at the level of the province through the intervention of the MEC and the endorsement of the Premier. So one thing you could do as MPs is help us. That bill is stagnating in the NCOP. Even their own deadlines that they've set, they're unable to meet. And we can do the process faster if you can speak to your comrades and colleagues there to process that legislation, which will address the practical problems, some at least, that the previous commission had. Secondly, I think that I think you should bring the commission before you, as you probably are doing shortly. Ask them what they did. You as a parliament are meant to have, over the years, every year, monitored and presented to them deadlines, which presumably this committee didn't do, and we as a department failed to also prevail upon the commission to do its job. So really, all of us are collectively responsible for the disaster that this commission's been. But we all recognize the urgent work it has to do. One has only to look at the media cursorily to see how many different claims are being made, new ones even, and the pressures on this commission to complete. It received something like, if I'm correct, 1,000 requests for settling disputes and claims. And it addressed, in fact, from what I can gather, only the paramount chiefs, the 12 of them. Half of them were de-recognized, as it were, and partly this is being addressed with the bill that's before the NCOP right now. So I think that what we should require is of the commission to appear before the committee and address this issue, that you monitor the quarterly, at least, the work of this commission, and you haul us here before you and make us account. If I may also take the opportunity to deal with two other issues. You see, the question that Peter raises about what happens with dysfunctional municipalities or that which are not working related to the issues of the allocation of funds for free basic electricity and what have you. This is part of a broader problem that the chairperson I know is acutely aware of, and maybe the other members of the committee, which is that the local government equitable chair and DORA actually based on statistics that are highly suspect. And indeed, we did report to you, I think, last week when we were here, or 2 weeks ago, that actually the Minister of Finance, a new one at least, is very prepared to admit that. In fact, in 2011, by then, we will have adjusted the statistics to take account of the changing patterns of migration and urbanization and movement of people. Now, between now and then, our department has put it to the Minister. You can't hold local government municipalities to account or to fail simply because the national sphere does not have its statistics correct. So there is some negotiation taking place in our department and Treasury to have an interim measure to address the discrepancy between the number of people in municipalities, including indigent, and the figures that are before the Treasury when it decides on its criteria for allocation of funds to municipalities, which in fact is based on the 2001 census. It's far too old. The 2007 survey, however, Treasury insists is highly suspect. They actually did one or two case studies looking at the statistics that emerged in the 2007 survey and what's actually on the ground. And there too, they claim a discrepancy. So we come back to the problem of our new democracy, the problem of statistics. And really, we're making attempts to address that, but it's not something one can deliver on overnight. In respect of the statistics that Peter points to, I think, speaking for the ministry, that's unacceptable. That's true. I must say, I think it's not. I think there's something more complex there. But if what Peter is saying is accurate, it's quite unacceptable, really. It's also unacceptable for us, if I can alert the department officials, to actually have to say, we will come back to you. But I gather from Tumi that the persons who are dealing with this area are stuck with the NCOP at the moment. So maybe that's understandable. But in general, when we bring our reports to you, and in future, the minister and I are accountable, we will avoid this situation of saying, look, we can't give you an answer now. So let's resolve this issue. It's very simple. Within 7 days, by the time we meet next Tuesday, we will give you answers in written form, and or if you like, we will start next week's meeting with maybe 15 minutes allocated to us dealing with the outstanding issues, which will mean that we won't bring this whole corpus of people here. It's unnecessary. Tumi will come with a one-person concern, and we will reply to you, and we will avoid it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just two, just on that point, I think the answer is on page 151, so they can come and tell us if that is correct. Yeah, okay. But that it was withheld at the provinces, paid over for the municipality at the provinces withheld, and then in August 2008, after interventions with the municipalities, it was paid over. So at the end of the financial year, the money was paid over. Okay, but they could have come to tell us whether it's correct or not.
But that's what I referred to
in the beginning. The improvement is that the department has picked up the problems and are not wasting money. So there are more municipalities that don't receive their money because the department has sharpened their... This is the difference that is made by reading the report in advance and a little later on. That's what it demonstrates. Peter, just pick it up now. No, I'm not blaming you. I'm saying that's the value of reading, because then you pick up stuff you don't understand, which would have been good to do it in advance. And the former MEC, having read it, speculated on the possible explanation and found it somewhere around the area there. Possible explanation, yes. Let me do this quickly, Comrade Yunis. The answers you did not have to me about the people who went to MCOP, you would have expected that we would raise questions about that section.
You didn't ask them,
hey, brief us, what are the likely landmines here? So that's what you would have carried along with you as part course for this meeting.
So in future, we won't accept that someone is not here.
We may think that this was strategy. So please don't do that in future. When one of your team members, the number 5, is not going to be there, you prepare for the defense of that position in advance. So one of you must have some of the at least answers to those questions. And Honorable Eunice.
No, sorry.
Just my last point. Now that you want us to do a confessional about how much responsibility we were, especially with the commission, what strikes me is that we've been accused by, I like that phrase, malicious compliance. Maybe what I'm doing is very bad practice for the person in my position, but let me do it anyway. That we put up this commission and we give this task in terms of reference and so on, and then we give them $2 million to do it. And then we clobber them when they don't do it. So aren't we guilty of having set them up to fail? That's a question that occurs to me. We have a similar thing with the Gender Commission, which is close to my heart. It also complained about the same thing. You set us up to do this thing, but then you give us a pittance to carry out this huge task. Okay? That's a question we should raise. Part of our responsibility as legislators also perhaps is to do a lot more of that, not just what are the financial implications of the decisions we are making. Okay? So this is what we're supposed to make. If it is legitimate that the Commission on Claims and Disputes and Traditional Issues, and that the allocations we gave them literally made it impossible for them to achieve that entire project in the time frames within which we expected to do so, then we must accept culpability in the mess that happens there. So that would be one way to do it, because I think you are correct in saying, but how responsible are we for what they have done? I mean, when we call them, but we must first do that exercise internally ourselves. What will they say in their defense? And in my imagination, this is the issue that they would raise as well. So maybe they could have done a little more, slightly better and so on. I don't know. That's speculation that as well. But I also feel that there's a case to be made that we may have set them up to fail by limiting the resources available to them to do the entire project, or even by accepting the limited work they were meant to do within the time frames that they had to do. So let's come back to it when we deal. They are on the agenda for dealing with their report as well. So in a sense, we will have an opportunity to go into detail with their discussions here. Okay. You wanted to say something, and then?
Another point. What is what the minister feels? I know he's raised this thing twice in my presence. If I'm correct, I don't know if Timmy can help me. We spent $14 million on them, and what they have delivered is far too little. That's what he has said. That's his view, and he's more in the loop than I am because he's the chair of the committee in the NCOP. You may be right, Comrade Chair. And I think in some respects, in some cases we have done that. We've not given people enough money. But the minister's view is not correct in this case. But it's something maybe we'll apply our mind to, as you say, when they come here. Secondly, I'm very struck by the criteria we use to decide improvement and so on. It's almost surrealistic, you know, when you pick it up, that we think it's a good thing. Because I wanted to draw your attention to something very interesting. I was in a debate not so long ago, and I said, you know, one of the success stories of the government is that we've been able to deliver grants to now close to 13.5 million people, when in 1996 there was 2.5 million people. And this academic shot back at me and said, so in other words, we've pauperized people, and we're claiming that to be a success, you know. I mean, it's an indictment of the society that close to 27% of our people are reliant on grants. Although they are shot back, and I'm partly correct, I would like to think that that's true, but at least we're reaching them expeditiously. I mean, it's quite a phenomenal thing to move up from 2.5 million people to 13.5 million people, given in other areas of state delivery we failed. But it's also true. It's a very severe indictment of us. The one success story, so to speak, is actually a failure. Similarly, yeah, we use these absurd criteria. And if Peter's not right now, he's right in general of government as a whole. I've chaired many committees, and I know this is how we see criteria of success. But I think there's a credible answer there, but I also agree with the chairperson that it's not acceptable, and I think we all agree the department does. Because like the budget and the annual reports are two key things which we must fully account for. But I would like to think that we can come back here next week and give you a credible answer, and I'd like to suggest that you invite us to do so. You know, I think the department, it must be understood, has got, as you know, a very wide range of issues to deal with. The scope of what we deal with, I mean, it's also dealing with entire spheres of government, certainly one, local government. And I think, you know, my own view is that, to some extent, I'm viewing a period that I was not a part of. And therefore, it's easier for me to say this. I think the department's performed better in the year under review than when I chaired this committee for 6 years. That's my view. I must tell you, in the 6 years, I don't know what Peter thinks, that I chaired this committee, the department was fairly weak, actually, quite frankly. And as a chair, I was immensely frustrated, but I was caught up also in being, being an ANC member and, you know, defending the government and so on. But I think the new president is not interested in all that, frankly. And the ANC chief of field will fire the chairpersons and whips of committees if they protect the executive. And so, the space for ANC members now to be critical of government, whether you want to accept this or not, is greater than ever before, and it helps us. So for what it's worth, Comrade Chair, I think the department, for all its challenges and for some of its weaknesses, is performing reasonably well. And I think I'd just like to say this. Thank you.
Any comments? Thank you.
Commissioner, I'm very happy that now we are on par. I'm happy that the deputy minister is also clear about what's going on, and then he's also helpful. I'm happy with that. But I would be much more happy if maybe the department, instead of leaving the people fighting on the ground, which is something which we were not even clear, as a department, national. Even there can be a situation which said, now, with the formation of tribal councils, since now we are not even ready with that commission, okay, stop it for a while. We'll tell you when we were ready, because they are relying on us here. Even the officials that are down there, they say, what are you doing there? Because we're waiting for you, the officials now. And then the people are saying, this is from the officials, what are you saying about this act? And now, if the department can just issue a circular down to the province, not all the provinces, So the problem which is SMK, their nature. No, not all provinces. If they can issue this circular to Eastern Cape, then no, Gobanam, with the formation of that council, just stop it for a while. We will tell you when we are ready. I very much happy about that. Because instead of leaving people for fighting with the down there, that's why I said to myself, I must bring the cutting to the minister, so that he can see for himself.
That's a proposal to
Cabinet.
Can we finalize it this proposal at the next meeting? Is that okay? Matoba, Joe? This is a proposal from you. What I'm suggesting, let's finalize its implementation, if at all, next week. Okay, all right. Okay. No, thanks. That's, honorable members and Deputy Minister and your team from the department, thank you very much for this engagement on the report. We clearly will do better next time in terms of the issues that we had to raise. I am aware that even if we wanted to, we wouldn't be able to go through every part of the report. We haven't gone sufficiently into the report. I do ask members to go and read. Now you have it in your hands. It is still proper that you must go and read it. Don't think because we have had this meeting, therefore it's over. Please go and read it. And if things occur to you during your looking at the report, it is your responsibility on our collective behalf to raise those issues with us here so that we table it before the department. It is still correct to raise them when they do come back to talk to us about it, when the opportunity arises. With those, thank you very much. See each other next time. This afternoon, at 3 o'clock. Members, please remember, you've got an engagement at 3 o'clock after the budget policy statement. Please. Sorry? Yeah. No, sir. I'll explain to you.
Yeah. Yeah, you heard.